Blog Talk Radio.
Here we go, Suspense Radio one-on-one, of course, in partners with partnersincrimetours.net. We bring you today on the show is going to be author Elliot Pepper, going to be talking about his trilogy. First book was called Uncommon Stock Version 1, or Uncommon Stock Version 1.0. He's going to be getting into that. We also want to let you know, of course, that all the shows on the Suspense Radio Network are brought to you by Kensington Books. Make sure you visit kensingtonbooks.com for their authors and their upcoming releases and the things that they had going on in their library in the past, some outstanding books and some outstanding authors like Lisa Jackson and Kevin O'Brien, just to name a few. Of course, if you want to email anything about the show, just email radio@suspensemagazine.com for more information. And the magazine is out, our newest edition, so you can check that out by emailing editor@suspensemagazine.com, and we'll send it right out to you so you can view all the fun stuff that we had going on in this issue, along with some new columns that we have written for 2016. I hope you'll like that. It's called Craft Corner. So Vincent Zandri and Deandra Jones was kind enough to lend their hand in support of that. So let's jump right in here to our first guest. Again, he is on tour right now with partnersincrimetours.net. If you're an author, I suggest that you check them out. They're a fantastic company to get you going right with your publicity. The book is called Uncommon Stock Version 1.0. That's just book one here in a trilogy that's already been released. So we want to welcome Elliot to the show. Elliot, thank you so much for coming on. How you doing?
Doing very well. Thanks for having me on, John. I really appreciate the opportunity to check in with your listeners.
Well, thank you. And, you know, a lot of people don't know also is that just because you're on tour with Partners in Crime, not everybody wants to come talk to me. I don't know why. I'm a pretty nice freaking guy. But maybe some people just don't like the radio and they're just a little uncomfortable, and then kind of get it. But so thank you for taking the time to click on that box to say, yeah, you want to come on with us. So why don't we just jump right in here now? Like we kind of talked a little off the air, and the book Uncommon Stock Version 1.0 is the one that is being featured on the blog, but that's just book one of the trilogy that's already out. So why don't you go ahead and give us from the beginning how this trilogy is and exactly what you got going on with fans and readers?
Sure, that sounds good. So the trilogy is called the Uncommon series, and yeah, the first book, Version 1.0, follows a pair of best friends that live in Boulder, Colorado, and they're going to university there, and they end up dropping out to start a new software company. Their software company is almost like it's almost like Microsoft Word, how they have automatic editing. So when you misspell a word, it puts a red line under it so you can correct it, right? And they do that, but for financial fraud. So they have a set of computer algorithms that allows them to identify fraud in financial data, and they start building a new you know, tech startup, basically in a garage. and along the way, from garage to IPO, they end up getting caught up in a huge international money laundering conspiracy, and so they have to build their company and sort of figure out what's going on in this dark, secret new world of sort of tech cyber crime at the same time.
Go ahead.
It's a tech startup thriller. If you've ever watched HBO's Silicon Valley, you could almost imagine it's HBO's Silicon Valley mixed with Netflix's House of Cards. There's a lot of sort of dark themes in there, but it sort of weaved in the whole Silicon Valley storyline into it.
So we follow these characters from book one all the way kind of through the trilogy. And one of your characters, Mira Winkle, is one of the ones outstanding. And then she has her best friend, James. And then you have some other
kind of
characters that kind of go through. So when we meet these characters kind of at the beginning, and like you said, you know, friends studying in Boulder, Colorado, University of Colorado, Boulder, and decide to get out and kind of do their own thing. When you built this story from the beginning, did you already know it was going to be a trilogy, so that's kind of how you wrote it, or did it end up being that way?
Sort of halfway in the middle. So when I started writing book one, I literally opened up Microsoft Word and started typing. I had no outline. I had no sort of list of characters or plot points. I started typing chapter one. And I sort of had a feeling that it might turn into a series. And so when I was working my way through the first book, I could tell that I was not getting close to the end of the narrative arc, even though I was reaching the end of that book. So it did sort of grow into a trilogy, but it definitely came as a surprise. It was not like, you know, there's the J.K. Rowling, you know, the author of the Harry Potter series, is very famous for having intricately plotted each of the books before even starting the first one. Whereas George R. R. Martin, who's famous for the Song of Ice and Fire series and, you know, Game of Thrones, he's famous for the first scene of Game of Thrones started as a short story, and then it expanded into this epic series, right? And so, you know, writers tend to call J.K. Rowling a bit of a plotter, and George R. R. Martin's more of a pantser, and I'm more on the pantser side of the spectrum, and that's definitely how these books evolve.
Now, in relation to your characters, so you had this basically wasn't, and I always like to find out if it's kind of like the chicken or the egg syndrome. So this basically wasn't characters talking to you before you sat down. This wasn't really a plot decided when you sat down. It just kind of pulled you to Word, and you just started typing, and then things just started coming out.
Well, what's interesting is the inspiration for the series to begin with. So the thing that got me started before those characters sort of grew to be their own people and the plot sort of played itself out, before I sat down to start typing chapter one, you know, what inspired me to actually do it is that I had spent a number of years. So I've both as a founder in tech companies, as well and an early employee in a couple different tech startups, and then I had worked as an entrepreneur in residence for a venture capital firm. So venture capital firms make investments into new products, new businesses, and new technologies, and then help those businesses grow. And so my professional career had involved dropping into all of these different companies, making investments, and helping accelerate them past growth milestones to just try to build these companies up. And what I discovered doing that work was just that it was a really rich world. So you have all these very high-powered personalities. You have a lot of fortunes sort of won and lost. There's a lot of behind-the-scenes politics and drama that happens that rarely reaches sort of our news headlines. And so the inherent human drama involved in the world of sort of tech startups just seemed like a very rich canvas for storytelling. And although there are thousands and thousands of business books and nonfiction books that cover that world, there isn't a lot of fiction. So, you know, if you think about John Grisham sort of, you know, starting to, he really popularized, although he didn't start it, he helped to dramatically popularize the legal thriller subgenre. It seemed that there was enough material to mine within the world of tech startups that it could be an equally rich canvas. And so when I sat down to start writing, I didn't really have a lot of the characters developed yet in my mind. I didn't really know where the plot was going to go. but I did know what the world was going to be. So I knew that it just felt like this was a good setting for adventure.
Wow. I mean, that's kind of, everybody kind of has their own way of writing, and people kind of have their own way of, you know, sitting down. You know, some people are very organic. Some people are, you know, very much like to do the outline process and things like that. But when you decided that, okay, I got some characters and I'm going to start doing this, and I kind of have an idea because I'm going to use my experience and my background, I guess, you know, Mira's kind of, I guess she would say, you know, she's the big dog in this trilogy.
Yeah.
So
yeah, she's definitely
what
the lead.
Was
she's
the pull to, so what was the pull to her? What was the pull between the two of you to kind of give her that spotlight instead of somebody else, maybe like James or someone else in the books?
Sure, yeah. So she's the only point of view character. So she's, you know, the whole story takes place from her point of view, and so she's definitely the lead protagonist. And you know, there were a few things I really liked about Mara. One is that I have a lot of really strong women in my life. My wife is incredibly smart, really very driven, and we have many other friends who are very successful business people who are very strong, driven women as well. And so that definitely, I think, played into where Mara came from. And then the other thing about Mara is that she's new to this world. So, you know, she's just a college student. She's in her sophomore year at university, and she sort of gets sucked into this because her best friend James, who's in computer science, develops this new algorithm, and he knows that he doesn't have all the right skills to actually take his new invention and commercialize it, actually like turn it into something. And he knows that, you know, Mara is in some ways, they're sort of each other's foils. You know, they've got very different personalities, even though they've been friends for a long time. And so he very sort of intelligently realizes that. And so he asks her to get involved very, very early. And when she does get involved, it obviously puts some strains and really changes their relationship. You know, co-founding a company is sort of like it's sort of like getting married, right? Like you're spending so much time working with one or two other people. There's so much pressure that you put on yourself in that context, and that you put on each other. So it's a really big, ambitious project to take on with another human being. And so when they start to dig in, it definitely strains and tests their relationship. And then in terms of why Mara sort of continues to be that lead, you know, she becomes the CEO of their new startup company. And so she's definitely, she's very driven, she's very action-oriented, and she's really smart. And so she takes the lead, she becomes the CEO, and she's trying to drive that company towards growth. And of course, at the same time, you know, a lot of people that do have that kind of drive, they often leave disasters in their wake as well, both personal and professional. And so that starts to play out over the course of the story too, just how their activities, both on sort of discovering this dark mystery hidden at the center of the banking system, also just the amount of personal sacrifice it takes to devote your life to building something like they're building, you know, that has all of these ripple effects for the people in their lives and the people around them.
And this, and I'm going to guess, because this definitely sounds like a trilogy that you want to read from the beginning to the end, that you just don't want to start with book two, then go to three, then go to one, or jump around and do it that way. It's probably better to start at Uncommon Stock version 1.0, then go to Power Play, then go to Exit Strategy. That's how you're going to get the most out of this.
That's absolutely right. So it's a linear, you know, it's a single narrative arc. It's a story told from start to finish. So in the first book focuses on them, you know, deciding to start this company and starting to get it off the ground. And then there are some big twists in terms of how sort of the dark side of what they're getting themselves into comes to the fore. The second book they're a little more mature. So they've grown quite a bit. Their company has grown quite a bit, and then also their involvement in the conspiracy they're trying to untangle has also grown a lot. And then in the final book, they're actually taking their company public on Wall Street. And as they're doing that, sort of everything comes to a head. And so, yeah, you definitely want to read the books in order. They're intended to be linear.
So let's talk about the bad guys in this
okay,
book, the creation of villains, because I'm always, the heroes are great. And they're all fine and dandy. But let's face it, when you're watching Batman, I mean, it's the Joker. it's those kinds of things that really drive the
Absolutely.
Story going along. So, like you said, kind of until book two in the middle that you decided that this was kind of going to be a trilogy. So,
right.
When you're looking at the bad guys and the creation of the villains, what was one of the one things that you wanted to make sure that you got across to the readers that these people or person were?
Yeah, so there were a couple things. One, it's actually I find it sort of funny. When you're watching Batman, like the villains are always more interesting, or often more interesting. And I feel sort of the same way when you're in the creative process of writing. I sometimes find it a lot easier to come up with a villain than to come up with a hero, or at least one that feels more unique and sort of compelling. So one of the things I'm going to have to be careful not to include spoilers as I describe this, because
right.
at the beginning of the story you actually don't know who the villains are, which is part of the fun. But there were a few things that came to mind here. One is that when you watch when you read a lot of thrillers, or when you or if you watch a lot of mystery movies or things like that, often the villains are. Sometimes the villains are essentially stupid. So they're like focused on short-term gains, like robbing a bank, at the expense of sort of like thinking longer term. So they might be really good at executing that caper, right? At like successfully getting away with the heist or whatever. But because they're so focused on that immediate reality, they like don't think about all the risk factors that go into robbing a bank. And they end up getting caught by Batman along the way, right? And so my focus here was that, nobody thinks they're a villain, right?
Even
if you look around our real world.
They kind of think what they're doing is for the greater good or something, yeah.
Right, like they have they've definitely rationalized their own behavior to themselves, right?
Yep.
And so in this book, that is 100% true. Like the villains do not see themselves as such. They think they're doing what's best for them in their worldview. And because of that, they take a much longer-term view. So they're not executing things they're basically not doing dumb crimes, right? Like they're pulling off extremely sort of sophisticated, fraud that involves political corruption and all of these different aspects. And I think that they come at it I try to come at it from a creative perspective as, okay, imagine you had a really, really smart person who had a really cynical view of the world, right? A really, really cynical view of the world to the extent, and they've been operating with that extremely cynical view for decades, and they've been very successful at it, because otherwise they're not truly a villain, right? Like there's a difference
right.
between a villain and a petty criminal. And so if what would that person look like? Like in reality, what would they actually look like? What would they actually be thinking about on a day-to-day basis? And what would they be focused on, right? And like, it's not robbing a bank, right, at gunpoint.
Mm-hmm.
So that was sort of a fun thought experiment of just, okay, we think about, evil as a very black and white issue, but that's really our own psychological blind spot, right? Nobody who we would judge as evil thinks of themselves that way.
Yeah, I mean, villains are great at justifying their means to their end and that what they're doing is correct. You know, and that's the one thing that's great as an author when they realize that that's what a villain is doing, because very, very few times when, you know, let's say you're a serial killer or something, do you really do it just because you're batshit crazy? You're doing it because of some reason, whether that reason is batshit crazy or not, you have that reason.
Exactly.
Right. So when you were writing book one and then you started going through the series, did you kind of learn a little bit more about yourself as an author and, you know, the characters kind of speaking as you started going through? So will people kind of see that transition from book one into book three, how things maybe have changed for you and yourself and you kind of learned a little bit?
Oh, certainly, yeah. So, I mean, that you could write a book about the answer to that question.
That's book four.
I mean,
that's called the epilogue.
Yeah, right, there you go. So I guess to take it one at a time, the characters definitely grew and evolved. Actually, I spent a lot of time revising the first book because as I was working my way through the manuscript, the characters started to surprise me. So they would, you know, I'd be going into a scene thinking that something would happen, and then I'd be in the middle of the scene, and Mara would, it just, like, I knew she wouldn't do that. She would do something else, right? She would do, instead of doing X, she'd do Y. Instead of eating the blue pill, she'll eat the red one or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so so that actually changed the direction of the story. And that really helped me get to know her better, as you know, and get to know the other protagonists better. And so by the third book, I've had more time to get to know them. I always try to think of characters as people, as I might think of a friend or something like that, rather than as a fictional construct, even though they are one. And so I felt like by book three, these were people I knew really well, right? They're friends I'd have over for dinner multiple times a week.
right.
And so because of that, it's really organic. And I think that a reader would probably notice that, right? And I think that's probably true of most authors writing characters over time. The more you get to know them, the sort of the more streamlined the prose becomes. So I think on the character front, that's probably there. And actually, I think, you know, some of the characters might even make cameos in future books, which would be fun. And then, I mean, on the writing front, again, that's a big one. I learned a lot actually on each book, and now having all three in the bag, there's definitely it's been quite a journey so far. I mean, the first book, again, this is probably true of most authors, but I think my first book is my roughest book. Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're still developing craft. I mean, I certainly hope that I never stop developing craft and learning to be a better storyteller, learning to balance description and action and dialogue and sort of internal dialogue and pacing. So on the first book, a good example of this is because I did an outline and I just started writing, the rough draft was not very tight. It was sort of sprawling. It was almost like, I don't know, like if you imagine a city where there was no planning department, right? Where you have random subdivisions and a factory next to a single family home or something like that. And so luckily my developmental editor, Shannon Pallone, she's actually been a wonderful editor for me because she used to be a developmental executive in Hollywood. So she worked with screenwriters and helped to produce films. And I'm writing novels, but the creative process for writing screenplays for television and film is very different because they are very rigidly structured. So any of your listeners, if you just Google, you know, screenwriting, you'll see it. It'll pop up and you'll learn about, you know, the three acts that every single story told on film has, you know, and then sort of the different, there's essentially a rhythm, right, throughout those three acts where these different things have to happen. And every single show you have ever seen fits that. And so that's a very structured, very established kind of storytelling, and I had been doing the opposite. I had been just sort of, you know, flailing around and feeling for what felt organic to me. And so when Shannon went through and did her first editorial run on the rough draft of the first book, it was really excellent because it came back with so many comments, right? Like we had to talk through all of these issues and, you know, like some things I would hold firm on because I'm not trying to write a book like a screenplay, right? But then other times she would press me on something and I would realize, yeah, you know what, that's right. Like a character would react differently, or the pacing is a little too slow here. Maybe we can cut some of the extra, right? Maybe we can take that single family home and not put it next to the factory, right? We don't have to demolish it, but we're going to move it or whatever.
Right.
And so that was extremely useful on the creative side. And I felt that. So like for book two, when I was writing it, things like structure and pacing, those two things, I came much more naturally during the rough draft. So then, you know, once we were in doing revisions and doing editorial, there were other problems, which then I had to fix, but those two things were a little bit cleaner. So I think that certainly every book I've learned a lot, and I try to keep focusing on that. I think that writing is a craft, and that the only way to learn to do it is by writing. It's one of those
Absolutely.
Things where you can read. Yeah, I mean, you know, there are certain things where you can do a lot of, I mean, this is sort of ironic, but book learning, right? You can read a lot about a topic, and that's actually going to give you a lot of actionable ways to get better at it. For me, you know, with writing, it's very useful to read good writing because then you develop your own taste, but you also just need to write. You need to write, and even if, you know, you need to write and it'll be bad, right? It'll be bad for a long time. And then you just keep doing it and keep doing it, and every time you do it, you'll get a little bit better.
Well, Elliot, we are coming down here to about the last 45 seconds here or so. So what I want to do is I want to kind of give you the last word to be able to kind of let everybody know your website, your social media, all that fun stuff to be able to connect more with you. So they take it away.
Okay, great. Yeah. So my website is ElliotPepper.com. That's ElliotPepper.com. I have an author newsletter there if you're interested in keeping up to date on my new books, and I send out reading recommendations and stuff like that. I'm pretty active on Twitter. That's @ElliotPepper, just my name. And, you can find all, if you go to my website, you can click on contact. It'll have all the links you could possibly need.
Yes. Well, I want to thank you so much. Have fun here. I mean, you're going through March 31st of this blog tour, so have a lot of fun. And we look forward to seeing kind of what you got going on in the future. And thank you so much for being a part of us.
Thanks so much for having me on the show, John. Have a great day.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So again, everybody, that is author Elliot Pepper, and the book is called Uncommon Stock. Now, it's the Uncommon series. That's just book one, Uncommon Stock version 1.0. If you go to Amazon and you click on it and you go to Elliot's name, you'll see the whole Uncommon series book 3. You can get it right now. It's $12.97. Boom. Click it. Send your Kindle. You're ready to go. This is definitely a series like a trilogy. You run it. You want to start with book 1, go to 2, go to 3. You really don't want to jump around. You want to get all that you can out of the story. So make sure you do that. On a somber note real quick, as I was sitting here, I just want to let you know that today is March 6th, and we just found out that former First Lady Nancy Reagan has passed away at the age of 94. So thoughts and prayers go out, of course, to the Reagan family, and just wanted to let everybody know that one. That just literally just came through as I was sitting here and boom, right on my phone, and I happened to see it and then I looked it up. So Nancy Reagan passed away at the age of 94 today, March 6, 2016. So everybody, we want to thank you all for listening. Make sure you go to iTunes, subscribe to the podcast to get all the shows right when they're done, and you can listen to everything. You can always go back. blogtalkradio.com/suspensemagazine is the website. So until next time, keep reading. Goodbye.